It is Shabbat Nassau. Yes, elevate, otherwise also translated as making an account. It's quite an interesting portion in that way, but lots of different themes and ideas which come out of this and also from the bigger picture, from, as I said earlier, of Bamidbar. The Torah portion this morning came from Numbers, Bamidbar 6, that was 22 through to 27. From the Haftarah, it's there from the book Shoftim, Judges, that was chapter 13 and verses 2 to 25, I think that went to in the end. And from the Messianic writings, we have that passage there from the first letter from Kippah, and that was chapter 3, from Peter there, chapter 3, 8 through to 12. As I said, lots of themes and ideas that we can be picking up on from this. But I want to begin with the bigger picture. Let's begin with the broadest brushstrokes, really, before we narrow it down into one particular little section and slice. Bamidbar, in the wilderness. The whole section of our Torah given to wilderness. A wilderness of emotions, a wilderness of spiritual connections and physical wasteland. If you've ever been out to that wilderness in Israel, then you will know the desolation of the place, as well as its awesome majesty of breathtaking scenery, coloured sands, intensity, the vibrancy of the place. If you sat on a rock as those mountain goats have gone springing beside you, trying to find wisps of grass to eat, and the heat that sits in the valleys of the rocks and the stones and the sand as it literally buzzes with the sound of insects and that intensity, you cannot have failed to have had your breath taken from the place, the awesomeness of it. It is quite unique. It is amazing to be there. It's a place, of course, of real contradictions. A place of staggering and probably surprising spirituality, to be in Bamidbar, to be in that wilderness, takes you to places of deep spiritual reflection. An overview, it literally connects with your heart and your spirit, and it moves you to view the awesome creation that God has made in that place. Surprising spirituality in a place which you would deem otherwise to be barren and dry and pointless. It's a place of transition of a nation, formed by its physical enforced dependence on God, a liberated band of slaves that have known nothing else than slavery in their own lifetimes, barely existing on the paltry food that they had and just hoping from one day to the next that they would live if Pharaoh let them, brought into this place, this rocky, barren place, and now forced to depend on God in that place. You can only begin to imagine the emotions and the feelings and the sentiments which were bubbling up in the people. And barely had we begun the journey when there we were at the foot of Sinai, having this amazing and awesome revelation of God given to us, this band of ragtag slaves still in our minds and our emotions and feelings. And God was speaking to us in that place. And this revelation that frames the existence of this people of God, a nation on the move, a nation as yet without a homeland, a nation of aspiration and hopes, anticipation and promise, on a journey, yes, still without a homeland at this point, full of the covenantal anticipation of God. It's difficult for us today some 3,000-4,000 years on, whatever it is, to even begin to connect with what that must have felt like, the spiritual journey that they were on. The overwhelming presence of God leading, fire and cloud taking them on day by day, literally following God, literally following God in a visual and spiritual way at that moment. It must have been amazing. It must have been awe-inspiring, and it must have scared the life out of them in all of this. And yet, these contradictions keep bubbling up. I was just pondering really the bigger picture of all of this, the broader sweep of that wilderness experience that really was forming us and framing who we are as a people, that really stirred me a little bit in the middle of the week there when I was thinking of this. The contradictions, the inherent contradictions, actually sort of built into all of this journey and the experience that we went through, the tensions of it all. I mean, there we were at the foot of the mountain, not even understanding as we do today. We talk about Israel, you can get on a Ryanair and fly out to Israel. You know, this is not a vision they had. But none of them had even seen Israel as we would understand it today. The horizon was basically their doorway to a pyramid, and that was it. And here we were sitting now in this wilderness, and God speaking to us, the tension of God speaking to us about a covenant, about this wonderful Torah which he was giving to us, and yet all the time this is going on, we're going, this is great, this is awesome, what a beautiful thing this Torah is, and yet it's connected to a land that we were not even in. How weird that must have seemed. How strange that was, tied to a land, and yet this covenant, this revelation, was given to us outside of the land. You know, reams have been written about this. Why, when God could have given us the Torah, as we crossed over the Jordan and into the land, why not give us the Torah then, when we've got literally boots on the ground and we can survey the beauty of the land of Israel and look at this covenant and think it is awesome and this is where we are and it's all going to be wonderful. But no, there we are in the barren wilderness outside our land, and God is speaking to us with his commandments and his standards of righteousness and everything connected again and again and again, connected to this land that was promised to Abraham, to us that we had never seen. There are answers, there have to be answers. Why was God speaking to us there in the wilderness with the Torah when he could have chosen to have given it to us, but clearly, deliberately chose not to, and spoke to us in the wilderness instead? We have to get into the mind of God to try and understand the deeper things, the deeper issues, the concepts which are going on here. In many ways, at that point, you know, the Torah which we were looking at that point, this national covenant, this national constitution, in many ways, literally, physically, could not even be actualized where we were. It was like the words of God were in limbo for us. They were predicting something amazing, something glorious, something awesome, and yet we are on a journey. Reaching out to what God has given us, reaching out to the vision for the perfection, for the beauty of it all, the aspiration of everything that God has given us there in the Torah. And yet it just felt, it must have felt for us all, it was just as it were slightly out of reach. As if somehow intrinsic to this revelation, intrinsic to this journey, is this understanding that there is a now, but not yet. There's something more powerful to come. There is something perfect over the horizon that we are reaching out to. And right now, though, all we have is this journey. There's something about being out the land. God speaking to us out the land, giving us his Torah out the land. Because Torah is land tied. It is connected to the land. And yet here we are in the wilderness. Out the land. What on earth is going on? Something yet future. And yet applicable now. And yet because we can't really fully do it, it's like we're almost set up to fail, to, as if it's somehow meant to teach us there's something yet forward, something yet ahead, something glorious there, which is going to be absolutely beautiful. It is going to be perfection. And yet now, we are interacting and grappling with those righteous standards of God in our weaknesses, in our vulnerability, in our imperfection, in our wilderness. We're reaching out for God. There's something designed in all of this which is leading us to literally lean into God through all of this journey and this experience with the land, the beauty of the land ahead of us. But it gets even worse. If we thought that was bad enough, if we thought that somehow this wilderness experience was going to be tough, we literally, as Israel, had no idea how tough it was going to get. Because there's a line in this which actually is quite shocking when you realise through history what has gone on, what has happened through history. It's not just that wilderness journey. I want to put it to you, that wilderness journey probably never ended in one way or another. Oh, we entered the land, didn't we? We arrived. Joshua brings us in. The Joshua and Caleb and Moshe dies just as we're about to go in. Brings us in and we're in the land. And hallelujah, it's all perfect then, isn't it? Is it? Well, I'll tell you, it's not. We were talking about this just the other day. What happened to you, Joshua? What happened to Caleb? What happened to our leaders who brought us into the land? Where were they? In fact, if you look at it, you know, we read it, we know from the scriptures, it says during those early years that everyone did what was right in their own eyes. We had some judges, we had a few individual single people in the whole land of all the people who had come in. There were single individuals who stood up and said, you know what, enough is enough, it's all going wrong, it's all going to the dogs, you've got to stop this. And, you know, and tried and did bits and pieces, but let's be honest, it was chaos, it was a mess, it was not perfect, it was far from it. You know, here's a thought for you. It's possible to actually be in the land and yet in some ways still living in the wilderness. The journey goes on. And when I say it kind of gets worse, I was reading something about this the other day that just kind of prompted me with the kind of, if I didn't look at the raw statistics, someone had worked it all out, but didn't keep it in my head. But what they were basically saying, for a large part of Jewish Israeli history, the nation has either lived in diaspora or it has been under occupation by a foreign force. What they're basically trying to say, which I think is relevant here, for the large part of Israel's experience, we have not been even in charge of our own land. Whether it's the Greeks or the Romans and the armies that were forever marauding and coming through and fighting war with us. And you got the 10 tribes in the north. They were taken out into exile in diaspora because of sin, corruption, falling away from the Torah. And if that wasn't bad enough, you've got Yehuda and Binyamin and Levi down in the south. They're clinging on saying, but we're going to keep it going, we're going to keep it going. And lo and behold, 300-400 years later, they went down and were taken out into exile too. The land once more was barren. It was a wilderness again. And even then, when we come back under Ezra and Nehemiah, is that perfection? Well, it's not. And do you know why we know it's not? When that temple was being rebuilt under Ezra and Nehemiah, yes, the bricks were going into the ground. Yes, the walls were going up. Yes, there were new altars and so on. But there was something missing in the temple, wasn't there? The Shekhinah of Adonai was never in that temple. Even that was not a full restoration. That was not a full homecoming. Let alone the fact that we know that most of our people remained in Babylon and did not come back into the land of Israel at that time. It was a handful, a small percentage that had the courage, whatever way you want to see it, to come back into the land and try to rebuild and turn the wilderness again into the holy land that God had given us, to turn it from wilderness into something else. Most of Jewish experience, from the wilderness years onward, most of Jewish experience has been an experience of not being in control of our lives, of our land, of our territory. I mean, I suspect you can go back even further, but before our time in Egypt, if you want to do this, Abraham, a wandering Aramean who walked up and down the land, didn't even possess it. His immediate family didn't even possess it. They were, you know, the sons going out to go back to find wives and so on. They wandered, they moved, they were nomadic, they were not putting down those kind of roots. We've always been a shifting, moving people, transient in this way. So it's an interesting concept. We kind of have this view, I suspect today again, because since 1948, you know, of Israel as a land. You can go down to Stansted and get on a plane and you can fly there. It's physical, it's real, and we've kind of grown up with that idea. But I want to put it to you, this has not been, on the whole, the experience of our people. Experience of our nation, our people, who want a transience. Moving on, the last 2,000 years, you know the history. Move from place to place, the people, the persecutions, the attacks, barely putting down roots before we were already being moved on again. To live, to be the people of God, is to have a remarkably small footprint in the land. And something else maybe you've not even thought about. Some of our national high points are rooted in diaspora. We don't call it the Babylonian Talmud for nothing. The yeshiva classes, the wisdom of the rabbis that was being put to paper, was all in diaspora. It was not in the land. We were out. Think of our greats, even through Jewish history, the Rashi, the Rambams, and so on. So many of them. Where were they great? In Israel? No. In diaspora, out of the land. As you're beginning to see a pattern here emerging, it's really quite an interesting one, isn't it? There is a land that is ours, and yet it feels like it's forever slipping out of our grasp, sliding through our fingers. As if we are kind of there, but not yet, not right there yet. It's as if, although we've now got that land, and since 1948 we have again, it still feels slippery in some way, as if it's still not fully real and fully realized. And I want to say to you, if I look at Israel today, I think exactly we still see that pattern. Yes, we are back in the land. But then, didn't we, those years back, we lost Gaza. Gaza slid out of our grasp. We lose the land. There's been constantly been talk about peace that might come if we separate the land into two states and give up, you know, Judea and Samaria and so on. This is not a hallmark of the fullness and the perfection of what God has promised. People, we need to be looking at all this and asking questions and asking why. And let's not even forget, before we just might get on our own horses here as Messianic Jews and say, oh, but if Messianic Judaism was doing all of this, it would look very different. Really? What did Yeshua say? Get out of the land and go and teach the nations what I have taught you. Even he said, get out. And in fact, as we know from history, And some of the commentators have commented on this, that Yeshua was saying, look, do your job, get out. You've got this job to do, you need to get out in the nations and teach them and show them that there is a God in Israel who is alive, and show them the righteous standards. And even Yeshua's followers going, no, we won't, we're afraid, we're scared, and blah, blah, blah. And in fact, it was only really then when those persecutions come in later on that in fact those Messianic Jews were uprooted and scattered amongst then the Roman Empire. It took even that to get them moving, to go and do what Yeshua said they should have been doing. Go out and teach everyone. Yeshua's focus was beyond the borders of Israel too. Now look, the land of Israel is vitally important. It is part of the Abrahamic covenant. It belongs to Israel, undivided, sovereignly, because God has given it to his people. But the land is not the focus. The land is a vehicle. The land is a means to an end. There's something bigger than just territory here. When we're talking about this wilderness journey, the journey is what we should be focusing on, and not just saying it's okay, it's good, we have borders, we get passports, we're okay because our feet are on the ground. If we think that's what okay means, we are deluding ourselves. There's a bigger picture in all of this. Something far more vital, which we need to get right. Yes, the land is deeply rooted in Judaism, but it doesn't just stop with that. It's a much bigger picture that is going on. All the vast chunks of our Israeli Jewish history, we have been out the land or been under occupation in some way. As I said, it just feels like there's something about this picture which we are meant to look at and think there is more to come. Perfection has not yet arrived. There's a journey, and that journey, I have to say, it's not a good journey, it's not a nice journey. I mentioned it at the beginning, didn't I, that said, you know, when you're talking about, I lost my track. So I was talking right at the beginning there about how we hold ourselves back and our walk before the Lord, and you know how we make that journey longer and so on. There's something more about all of this, that we as Israel are a visual example to this world. You know, it just struck me that actually if we could lock the borders, and if the Torah had been given to us within the land, we could have shut it down and everything that happened to us, or we could have just got on with it. Out in the wilderness, out in the world, you cannot hide. You're visible. I mean, there's bits here in the scriptures, we said this before, that we wish we're not there. I bet Korach would have wished that he's not being talked about 4,000 years later on for his rebellion. We do talk about it, it's there. Ananias and Sapphira, I bet they probably wish they weren't being talked about here 2,000 years on, but we do. If you ever want a nation's dirty washing being washed in public, this is it. There's something about this being in public which means that everyone gets to see who and what we are. There's something about this journey, something which the Torah encapsulates more than just the commandments. There's actually a journey of movement towards something which is coming. A job which we have in the not yet but now stage, which is really, really important. People see us, they see how God deals with us, they are watching, the world watches us as Israel. And that should scare us. The world has always been watching us. They were watching us in the desert, they were watching us in the wilderness. The Egyptians were watching us when we were there. The nations around us through history were watching us. You know, someone was saying that the only true high point in the whole of Israeli Jewish history are the reigns of King David and Solomon. We might possibly add on to the back of that Hezekiah and Josiah and one or two other kings. But on the whole, the only period of history that we know from our own scriptures that counted as a cultural, spiritual high point of the nation was under King David and Solomon. People, that's a tragedy. It's a tragedy. And no wonder, of course, therefore, the Messiah's rule and reign is connected with King David. That's why that connection is there. The rule of King Mashiach Yeshua is going to be another high point. But now we begin to understand something. If that rule of David was one of the ancient high points of Israel, then we are moving towards another high point in Israel, which will be the rule and reign of King Mashiach when he returns to Israel again. But before that happens, this is wilderness time, this experience that we go through, the journey of it all, which is known to be ours. And on that journey, we do have a job to do. There's no doubt about it, we do. God has called us to a job while we are yet waiting for this future fulfillment. That future fulfillment is coming. It will come. We know it will. We've read the last pages of the book of Revelation. We know this future fulfillment is coming. The heavenly Jerusalem will descend. Perfection will arrive. But by implication, when we are talking about that, we are left with this thought that if that is perfection that eventually comes down, as it were, from heaven and replaces all of this physicality, then what we've got now is not yet perfected. It is still to come. It's a hope. It's an aspiration. It's a yearning. We know that perfection is coming, but right now we are still on that journey. And I wonder if we had ever achieved that perfection in the land, if Israel had got this moment in time where we can look at it, where the nations could look at it and go, wow, that is perfect. That's what we want to be like. I wonder if we'd ever got to that point, whether we would ever have bothered to consider Mashiach at all. That we'd achieved it in our own strength, in our own power. But what this journey, this wilderness journey through the millennia has proven to us is that no matter how hard we try, we never achieve it. We've tried and failed. Even the high point of King David and Solomon, even that we know was brief, it was transitory, and even that wasn't perfect. It was good, but it wasn't perfect. You know, Solomon multiplying horses and wives, and let's not even talk about some of King David's exploits. It was good, it was a high point. But really, it wasn't perfect. There will yet be, in the future, a heavenly Jerusalem, as it were, a heavenly Israel, which will come down. That is yet to come. And I think this, if nothing else, the journey that we're on right now teaches us this. You know, so it amazes me sometimes. I think, you know, we can delude ourselves. I hear sometimes, especially a Zionist, Christian Zionist with all of this, the way they talk about Israel, as if it was perfect right now. Look, I'm not going to step out of line and be nasty here, but I want to assure you, Israel today is not perfect. Has to be said. I said this before in sermons, you know, it really it surprised me way, way back when I first started going to Israel. I remember driving past big high walls and barbed wire and whatever. And I remember asking someone in a coffee shop where we pulled in and was saying, well, I said to them, what is that that's down the road then? He said, oh, that's the maximum security prison. And at that moment, I was shocked. In Israel? You need maximum security prisons in Israel? You mean there are Jews inside that prison? And I remember conceptually being in a turmoil with this. I hadn't expected it. Somehow in my head I thought, yeah, but no, we Jews are different, we're better, we've got it all sorted, and we're okay. I expected there to be criminals from other countries in there, but Jews in there? It just didn't seem to make sense. We are not perfect as a nation. We have not been perfected as a nation. We've not yet even had a government since 1948 that was perfect. Of any colour. I'm not pointing fingers at any. Each one has done its best. It's been a mixture of good and bad and whatever. We are not yet in that place. And yet, you know, it seems the world sometimes has this view that Israel is perfect and it needs, you know, Israel is not perfect right now. It has not been perfected. It will be. It will be. Israel will be the head and not the tail. Israel will be that perfect nation and country with Mashiach, Yeshua, ruling and reigning in future. It will be that. It will be a true light to the nations. Actually, talking of the light to the nations is exactly, of course, what Yeshua said we should be doing. We know it, of course, from Exodus and elsewhere. But before we get into the final thought of how we can be that light, this is from Matthew 5, 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your mitzvot and glorify your Father in heaven. Yeshua was not talking to Christians when he said that. He was talking to Jewish people, because they were the people who were standing around him on the day that he spoke those words. That is not a phrase given to the church. The church didn't exist. He said to his Jewish brothers and sisters, let your light of Torah so shine before men out there that they will see your mitzvot. Right? Your good works of Torah, the light, and glorify your Father in heaven. This has always been Israel's job and calling and task. How are we meant to shine that light? How are we meant to do this? What's the reality of this in some way? You know, there is an answer in our portion today that comes with this understanding of what do we do now? The now being in this transitory period, call it still in the wilderness if you want, even though we've partially as it were, connected with and got hold of the land, but it's not yet perfected. How do we, on this wilderness journey, before perfect arrives, be light to the world and the nations? What is it specifically that we're meant to do? Yes, the good works, the mitzvot. Of course we're meant to be keeping the Torah. There's something even bigger than that we have in this portion this week that we literally read from the scroll. Deuteronomic blessing. In the middle of this portion, one of the most famous of all Torah texts outside the Ten Commandments, the Aaronic Blessing. Why am I picking on the Aaronic Blessing in particular about being a light? I want to use the idea of this Aaronic Blessing and stretch it into what our calling and our task is truly meant to be on this journey. Because the Aaronic Blessing, its purpose is to mediate the blessing of God to the people. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. The high priest is not blessing the people. The high priest is a vehicle of blessing. He's a conduit of blessing to the people of Israel. God blesses through the high priest to the people as the high priest is blessing the nation. The high priest transmits that blessing, the conduit, if you want to see it that way. And this priestly caste that we have in the Torah outlined for us was specifically created to be constantly in contact with the Lord, a caste or group of people whose very existence is to be bound up with God at all times and therefore be a source of that spiritual blessing through which the blessing of God could flow. Get it? This is a group of people who are fully dedicated to God, that they may in turn be a vehicle and conduit to bless others. This is at the heart of the Aaronic blessing. It's at the heart of all blessings. But now we're going to play with the idea and extend it, because Israel is talking about a priesthood of all believers, right? This is who we are meant to be, a holy nation, dedicated to God, the priesthood of all believers. The idea we read about in the Messianic writings is built upon that Exodus 19 idea. As a nation, we are priests. Just as the high priest is the priest in our nation through us, Israel, as a nation of priests is meant to be the conduit of the blessing of God to the world. It is serious. But it's bigger image and picture than all of this. You see, the high priest and the priests would not have been able to be that conduit to transmit the blessing of God if they had failed in their calling and their task to be a group of people that were fully clean, fully holy, and fully dedicated to God. If the priests were fully dedicated to God, then there was a clear passage of blessing that would come through them to the people. If Israel are fully dedicated to God, they are clean and holy and therefore able to be a conduit for the blessing of God to the nations. It's our call and our task of what we're meant to be. When Yeshua talks here about being a light to the world, and the light that we read about in Isaiah and other places, all the way back into Shemot, this idea that we as a nation are so supposed to be living out the mitzvot that they will see our good deeds and glorify the Father who is the God of Israel. The nation should see our good deeds, our righteousness as Israel, our holiness as Israel, our dedication as Israel, as Jews. The world should see that service to the one true God. And when they see it, and that holiness and righteousness shines out around the world, it'll cause the nations to come to us and say, "Let me grab your tzitzit, for God is with you. I am following you," says Zechariah. That light is meant to shine out around the world. God wants to bless the world through the people and nation of Israel. But there is that word of caution in there. We as a nation can only be a blessing to this world if we as Jews, as Israel, are fully, completely dedicated to God. As a nation, all of us, all of us. And then God will bless this world. Then we will project that divine light to the nation of priests. I began this morning, that we're talking about how that journey is made longer and so on. And I want to end with that final thought again right now, because it's important. If this priestly caste had fallen away from God, had fallen into sin and corruption, it would have blocked the flow of God's blessing on the nation. In other words, it would have made the job of being Israel harder, longer, more complicated. It's meant to be easy. Yeshua said, "No, my load is easy. My yoke is light." It was not meant to be hard. It's meant to be easy. Because we're meant to be flowing with his blessings, in his power. So the question then really is what about you? Will you be dedicated and submitted enough to God to be a part of that conduit of blessing that you're meant to be? What is your life like right now? Are you walking with the Lord closely enough that the people around you, your neighbours, your colleagues at work, that when they look at you, do they see blessing? Are they blessed by knowing you? Or is your reputation, some of the people at work say, "Oh no, don't talk to them at the water machine." What is your reputation? Or they'll drag you down, they'll depress you, don't go. Or they're toxic, don't, avoid them. Or is your reputation, go and spend time with X, you'll love it, they're great, they're going to really build you up, they're optimistic, they're encouraging, they're hopeful, they're full of the Spirit of God. You know what, just being with them makes me feel better, and cheers me up on a day when I'm feeling down. What is your reputation? Are you transmitting the blessing of God? Are you an open conduit for him? Or are you blocking it? Causing problems? Will you be a blocked spiritual duct that holds back the power of God in your life? It's an interesting question, isn't it, when we think of it this way. We were out in the wilderness for a reason, as our nation was, and arguably, in many ways, still is, if not physically, then spiritually. We're out in that wilderness for a purpose right now. We're out in that wilderness because we are meant to actually be rubbing shoulders with people, actually be there showing people this journey. Actually, we are meant to be indicating in our own lives, the perfect is coming. This is where we are all going. But in that journey, we are meant to be the ones who transmit God's blessing. That is also our national journey, it's part of it too. To transmit it, while we're out in the wilderness, out in the world, is what we've been in diaspora for. Even the rabbis know this. The rabbis in the commentaries say this again and again. One of the reasons for diaspora is that God takes us out into this world to show people that the God of Israel lives by our lifestyle, by our mitzvot, exactly as Yeshua says. The wilderness is not only real, it becomes an intrinsic part of our walk while we wait for that perfection to come. So don't be discouraged. Don't give up heart. Don't think it's all too long and it's never going to end. It will end. The perfect will come. And in the meantime, be a blessing. Be a blessing. Don't be a curse in people's lives. Be a blessing in people's lives. And people know that the God of Israel lives. Amen.